historically, plants have played an important role in both feeding us and looking after our health. Think quinine for malaria, rubber, rice, wheat. But what are going to be the important plants of the future? I'm joined by Director of the Royal Botanic Gardens Victoria and Blueprint for Living's resident botanical guru Tim Entwistle, who always brightens my week. But today he's taken that one step further. We're looking to a plant-led utopia. Tim, you're joining us to sing the praises of some plants you believe might just save the planet.
I am, Michael, and I think they've already probably got us to where we are. So if we're going to go for the next few centuries, we'll need a few extra plants, I think.
So before we get to the ones that you think are going to kind of push us through to the future, let's do a little refresher for the less botanically minded of us. What would you peg as, say, the five most important plants so far in the history of the world?
Well, look, they're fairly obvious in some ways. If you think about it, it's things like wheat, maize and rice. And in fact, 80% of all our calories come from just 12 plants. So there's a very small number of plants, and three of those, that's the wheat, the maize and the rice, give us about half of our calories. So they're the classic ones that have made a difference. But at the other end of the spectrum, they're ones that have looked after us and our health, and things like penicillin, which comes from a fungus, and aspirin, which comes from the willow, and quinine from a tropical tree, which has had a huge impact in the past, helping with treating malaria, and is also coming back in these days again.
Tim, I want to be not a reprobate and just go straight to the gin and tonic when it comes to quinine, but it's there. I can't help it. That's my go-to.
Well, it is, and I made sure I didn't mention coffee first, because that's the one that I go to, and it's the second most traded commodity after oil. So plants are important commercially and, of course, to help us survive.
So, and I accept that, and for all I occasionally tease you about plants being purely ornamental and not having any actual useful function. I get that kind of centrality to the success of human life, but I'm surprised by the idea that there might be ones that have undiscovered benefits or as yet untapped benefits and going into the future. So talk to us about that. What are the ones that are going to have that crucial importance over the next period?
Well, these are the really intriguing ones, because we know we're going to keep improving on things like wheat and try and get perennial wheat and try and make it stronger and better and all that kind of thing. But there's some plants out there that we just don't quite know what they do yet. And there's a huge rate, you know, 300,000 plants or more in the world. There are many still to be discovered, and most of them we really don't know what they do.
Can I just stop you for a second? Many still to be discovered. What rate are new plants being discovered a year? Do you know roughly how many?
Well, yeah, I think there'd be in the hundreds of species. That's if you exclude things like algae and fungi. And in the fungal world, we know there's hundreds of thousands of species still to be discovered. So every week there's number of species being described scientifically. So yeah, look, and that's locally as well. These things found out in the bush, as well as sort of re-looking at things we knew already.
I'm so sorry to interrupt, but I did love that idea that, you know, we think about all the frontiers having been explored, and you're telling me that here in our gardens, in our forests, there's things still being discovered all the time. So talk us through some of these specific examples that you think are going to be game changers.
Well, look, the ones that are really interesting are where we find something that's often had a bit of a local use. So it is known locally to a village or a community somewhere in the world, and then it's discovered, in inverted commas, by the rest of the world. And one of the great ones, I think, is this, what I call a water purification plant. And its botanical name is Moringa oleifera. Oleifera means olive. And Moringa is a thing that kills bacteria. So while it's been used for cooking oil, for fertilizers and food for many, many years in the tropics, it's now been discovered you grind it up, put it into water, and it purifies it enough to be able to drink it, and also gets the sort of silt out of the water so it looks like you can drink it. So this is a plant that has the ability to help a billion people in developing countries who use untreated water to drink and wash in.
And does it have the potential to have that purifying effect in kind of sustainable amounts, or does it take an entire field of this plant just to clean a glass?
No. You grow. It's very efficient. In fact, it's really easy to propagate and grow. It's highly drought resistant, and because it's already grown locally and ground up and used, it's really easy to access. So this is a plant that could save, well, at the moment, about 2 million people die each year, I gather, and a lot of those under the age of 5 from diseases contracted from water. So this could actually make a huge difference, that one.
Wow, that's extraordinary. All right, scientists lining up for the Moringa oleifera.
Yeah, that's right, or oleifera.
I'm doing my darndest on these scientific names. All right, so water purification is a pretty major solution. What next?
Yeah, okay, that's number one. Number two, I reckon, is a heavy metal plant. In this case, We produce lots of heavy metals as pollution, mining, industry, agriculture, all that kind of thing. We leave metal all over the planet. And what they've discovered are that some of the plants that grow in metal-rich soil naturally, and there's one they've just discovered called, it's another tricky one, but anyway, Rinaria nicolifera. And nicolifera is from nickel. So this one grows where nickel is in the soil in the Philippines. And they've discovered that they can grow this to extract that nickel from polluted areas, harvest the plant, and then take that away. So in a way, you're cleaning up that area.
So the plant absorbs the metallic...
It takes up the nickel out of the soil into the plant, and if you come along, harvest the plant, then you go, and you've got to take it somewhere, but you can take it away from the soil where you want to grow your plants. And one of the really neat little tricks with this is you might even be able to harvest the nickel from those plants and reuse that eventually.
Oh, no, that's crazy. I thought you were just going to say it had to be destroyed, but you're telling me we could double down.
A little bit of work to do, but that's the potential of this plant, only just discovered. There's about a 400 or 500 species that have this, that like metal in the soil. So there's a few other possibilities.
I'm alarmed. You've already named two plants with more practical application than myself. That is slightly troubling. I see a grim future. All right, give us number three on your list.
All right, we're at the medicine plant. Now, this one's been around for a little while. It's called the neem tree. And I first discovered this about a decade or so ago. I read this great book by Paul Ehrlich and Andy Beattie, who wrote a book called Wild Solutions. And they were looking at plants and animals that were saving the world, the kind of discussion we're having today. And they said this was destined to become the world's most valuable tree crop. Now, it hasn't quite happened in the 10 years so far, but it's used for treating diseases, for discouraging and killing pests, for making soap, feeding stock. But there's still a huge potential because it's very easy to grow and it has multiple uses. So these trees that are going to be the solution, I think, will have more than one use. And this one, the neem tree, has great potential because it can do all kinds of different things.
And mainly on the medicinal front.
Mainly medicinal, and actually as a pesticide seems to be the most likely one. And in fact, it even could be something we could use in our lovely urbanised areas here in Australia to control pests without killing birds and mammals that might just target insects. I should point out that's a little bit weedy if you're up northern parts of Australia.
A neem tree, number three with a bullet. Number four.
Now, number four, I've got something to show you here.
I'm always scared when you do show and tell, Tim. It's only a matter of time before I catch something.
I know you're going to want to put your finger in this, but so we'll take the lid off.
You know me so well. I do not want to put my finger in that. That looks disgusting. Tim has brought in a jar of snot. Talk us through why.
Look, this is a green, slimy substance in water. It's algae. It's freshwater algae. And this one's he's putting his nose in it, but if you put his finger in, it'd be. He's not going to drink it. No, don't, please.
Oh, okay. It was very bitter.
Because this could be used as a fuel source. Now, algae are already used for food. Just think of sushi. It's thickening agents in toothpaste, fertilizers. But there's great potential as a biofuel. And in 2010, they actually flew a twin-prop plane on 100% algal fuel in a Berlin air show. Now, I don't actually know how far it went. It's probably like one of those early Wright Brothers ones where they get off the ground and then drop down.
That's okay. That's a win as far as I'm concerned, and purely on algae.
Purely on algae. They're using one called, Botryococcus, which is a tiny little microscopic algae, produces lots of oil, and you can generate, you know, enough to fly a plane. And they're working on planes for the next couple of decades. Eventually, they think a mix of wind, electricity, and fuel. The only thing I'd say about algal fuels, they've been talking about a lot as a potential source. But just to provide enough, and I'll just get that off you so you don't get your finger out of it, just to provide enough to, say, support the transport of, you know, road transport in Europe, you'd need to have algal farms covering the whole of Portugal. So
right.
The scale has to be sort of worked up a bit.
I can't see why the Portuguese would object to that plan. So that's four. Give us the fifth and final of your plans that are going to change the world.
Final one, oil-eating fungi. Now, fungi are not really plants. In fact, they're more closely related to us.
So you've cheated
animals.
Your way through this list.
I have, but I just can't resist because fungi are just so fantastic. And we know that we eat them, of course, mushrooms. We know, I think they're in Vegemite, aren't they, as yeast. But then they already do a lot of good. When I was a kid, I was told to put a shovel full of dirt on an oil spill on concrete. And if you leave it there, that eventually starts to eat the oil off. And they're discovering that more and more fungi can do things like that. So even around Fukushima, after the radioactivity was leaked there, they're using fungi to clean up all kinds of chemicals. And the oyster mushroom is one of the ones that's being used. And it's being trialled in the Amazon to clean up these big oil-rich pools that have been left.
That is definitely a worthwhile pursuit for a humble fungi. I think you have convinced me, Tim, with that list. That is sensational. Thank you so much.
And none of those you could eat, I should point out.
That is probably for the best, I think. Professor Tim Entwistle is our resident botanist, who in his spare time is also director of the Royal Botanic Gardens Victoria. That list of plants and a link to Tim's blog are up on our part of the RN website. And that's where we're going to leave you for another week. There's plenty more Blueprint for Living next week, including more from Tim. He's going to be back with us exploring which indoor plants are a must-have to clean up the air in your house. If it's not a fungi, I'm going to be deeply disappointed. And we're going to be heading to New York to walk the streets and find out more about some of its well-known buildings and the people who lived in them. That's it for Blueprint for Living for another week. We look forward to speaking to you next week. Bye for now.